One of our patrons, Michael Kirby, said that the best way to get negotiated peace between people was to form a choir. We have a saying that, you know, once you sing with the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir, out is out. You know, you've been up there on a public stage performing, so you can't kind of crawl back into a closet.
To This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Indian judge orders major pro-queer reforms, Australia's right-wing party of homophobes is pooping out, and singing Stronger Together in Sydney. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
With NewsWrap. A summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 12, 2021. When a young lesbian couple in India sued local police for harassment after their homophobic parents filed missing persons reports, they had no idea they could be opening the door to sweeping protections for LGBTQ people. The women are in their early 20s. They had fled their homes in Madurai and moved to Chennai when their parents refused to accept their relationship. After hearing their case on June 7th, Justice Anand Venkatesh of the Madras High Court ordered broad government reforms to protect LGBTQ people from discrimination. He wrote that, "I realized, after a one-on-one interaction with the petitioners, that it was society that has to set off on a journey of understanding them and accepting them and shed our notions, and not they who have to turn themselves inside out to suit our notions of social morality and tradition." The justice's ruling orders government officials and police officers to undergo sensitivity training to ensure that they respect the rights of LGBTQ people. Venkatesh also ruled that promoters of so-called conversion therapy to cure queer people should lose their medical licenses. Schools and colleges should offer gender-neutral restrooms, and transgender prisoners should be housed separately if necessary to protect them from sexual assault. Venkatesh pointedly ordered state and federal government agencies to inform him of specific steps they take to comply with his ruling. He warned that ignorance is not justification for normalizing any form of discrimination. LGBTQ advocacy groups celebrated the groundbreaking judgment. High court rulings in India apply nationally unless another high court rules to the contrary, so it is hoped that the Madras decisions will stand. Activists also hope that Justice Venkatesh takes concrete steps to enforce his ruling.
Victims of recent anti-queer police raids are finally out of jail in Uganda and Ghana. 44 Ugandan defendants were released over the course of the past week after being behind bars since May 31st. They had been caught up in what authorities called a gay wedding at an LGBTQ homeless shelter in the city of Nansana. Their trials on charges of negligent acts that could spread COVID-19 are scheduled to begin on July 8th. According to activists, at least 20 of the men were subjected to invasive anal examinations that are falsely claimed to prove homosexual activity. Some human rights groups call the procedure torture. The East African country has been one of the worst places on the planet to be LGBTQ for more than a decade. Longtime President Yoweri Museveni has backed several versions of bills to punish private consensual adult same-gender sex. The notorious one that would have punished aggravated homosexuality with death was overturned on a legal technicality. Current Ugandan law imposes a 10-year prison sentence.
All of the defendants arrested in the city of Ho, Ghana, have been released on bail, according to their advocacy group's Twitter announcement this week. Police had detained 21 people at a meeting organized by Rightify Ghana on May 20th. Local news media were tipped off to the gathering and got there ahead of the police to be sure no one escaped. The activists were ironically there to learn how to document and report anti-queer human rights violations. The 16 women and 5 men spent up to 22 days in crowded and less than sanitary jail cells. Their next court appearance is scheduled for June 20th. Private consensual adult same-gender sex is punished in Ghana by up to 3 years in prison, but overt homophobia has been on the rise in recent months. Lawmakers are currently considering a no-promo homo bill to criminalize LGBTQ advocacy.
Australia's far-right Christian Democratic Party has been forced into receivership after its board determined that it was teetering on insolvency. It all began to unravel last September. Former Treasurer Charles Knox filed suit against the party's founder and chairperson Fred Nile, his wife, and other family members, accusing them of siphoning off more than $100,000 in party funds for personal use. A second lawsuit challenged how board members were chosen and questioned party elections in general, according to qnews.com.au. The Christian website Eternity News reported this week that Justice Patricia Henry of the Equity Division of the Supreme Court has appointed an administrator manager to take over the affairs of the party. The administrator will convene an emergency general meeting of the members to elect a new board, but the pending litigation will probably doom the organization anyway. Fred Nile has probably been Australia's most high-profile homophobe for decades, forever railing against every advance toward equality. Nile announced his retirement in April and passed the flaming anti-queer torch to the equally homophobic Lyle Shelton, who used to lead the Australian Christian lobby.
The United States Senate has designated the site of the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida, as a national memorial, and did so by unanimous vote. That's a rare accomplishment these days. It marks the fifth anniversary of the June 12, 2016 massacre. A disturbed gunman killed 49 people and injured more than 50 others during Latino night at the queer-friendly night spot. The bill already passed in the House in May. President Joe Biden is expected to sign it into law. Democrat Darren Soto of Florida was the lead House sponsor. In a statement emailed to The Advocate, he wrote that, "The federal designation of the Pulse National Memorial is a deeply meaningful way to honor the lives that were taken that night." An interim memorial occupies the club site now. Plans are in the works through a nonprofit foundation for the National Pulse Memorial and Museum. It will incorporate the remains of the club into a garden with a reflecting pool and 49 trees, with the open-air museum planned for construction a half mile away, according to the Orlando Sentinel. A survivor's walk will trace the half mile the wounded traveled from the Pulse to Orlando Regional Medical Center.
Another lavender ceiling has been crashed, this time in Texas. Jalen McKee Rodriguez defeated an entrenched incumbent this week to win a seat on the San Antonio City Council. That makes him the state's first black gay elected official. The 25-year-old former math teacher told reporters that if you have the right motives, the right passion, and you're a good listener, people will trust you. McKee Rodriguez received more than 60% of the vote in the runoff election. He once worked for the incumbent, but they parted ways over alleged anti-queer harassment and discrimination. McKee Rodriguez got his bachelor's degree in communication from the University of Texas and will get a master's of educational leadership and policy studies this year. He and his pharmacy technician husband live in San Antonio suburbs.
This is the first day of Pride, and it only took a matter of a few hours for them to come and confiscate it. It's just petty and unfortunate.
Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman reluctantly took down his pride flag. The Democrat and longtime queer ally had unfurled it on his office balcony despite the overwhelmingly Republican state legislature's rule that any flag other than the state and U.S. flags must be approved for display on the Capitol complex. Fetterman acknowledged to the local ABC TV affiliate that he was technically breaking the law, but pointed out that it's perfectly legal to discriminate or deny service to members of the gay or trans communities in Pennsylvania. The Republican legislative majority rejected bills this year to embed anti-bias protections for LGBTQ people in the state constitution and to remove homosexuality from the state's penal code.
Finally, homophobia in Major League Baseball is slowly but surely melting away. The Los Angeles Dodgers held their colorful annual Pride Night on June 11th. They pummeled the visiting Texas Rangers 12-1. The rival San Francisco Giants kicked things off on June 5th with the introduction of on-field uniforms sporting the 11 colors of the Progress Pride rainbow flag. They edged the visiting Chicago Cubs that night 4-3. Giants president and CEO Larry Baer said in a statement that the pride-promoting uniforms honor the countless achievements and contributions of all those who identify as LGBTQ+, and are allies of the LGBTQ+ community.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude. for the week ending June 12, 2021. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can read the transcript and listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay safe.
This just in. Guess who surprised Pride participants in Washington, D.C.?
Happy Pride! Hi!
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris and Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff briefly joined an abbreviated Pride walk in the nation's capital on June 12th, a historic first for the country's second-in-command. COVID restrictions prevented a full-scale parade, but did not prevent the Veep from speaking to those who gathered along the way.
We need to make sure that our transgender community and our youth are all protected. We need still protections around employment and housing. There is so much more work to do. And I know we are committed and we understand the importance of this movement and our roles of leadership in this ongoing movement. Happy Pride!
Happy Pride, Vice President Harris.
Coming out of the dark.
On its way to marking 30 years of carrying a tune for liberation, this past year of lockdown has been the longest for the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir. They've been coming out of the dark with performances on Zoom, but now the choir is returning to the live stage to celebrate its anniversary. This Way Out, Sydney correspondent William Broom chats with choir president Liz Eglinton about its legendary past, its life during COVID, its exciting comeback concert, and its future.
Liz, congratulations on 30 years of the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir. Can you take us through the history of the choir?
A man by the name of Rob Holland, who had been to the Gay Games in Vancouver, saw the combined choruses there singing and thought, Sydney needs a choir. So he put an ad in the Sydney Star Observer for people who were interested in coming to a meeting about starting a choir. And after a couple of meetings, that group of 19 people got together, came up with the name the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir, and in 1991 was the first performance, which was the Blessing of Mardi Gras.
You and your partner have been in the choir for 28 years. Why did you join and what do you think it's brought to your life?
We joined after my partner's mother had died unexpectedly in very unpleasant, difficult circumstances. So we were both really, you know, struggling with having to deal with that. And we really felt like we wanted to do something happy and joyous. We'd heard about the choir and we listened to the choir sing and we joined the very next week. And that was in November 1993.
What's it brought to your life?
Because of the early 90s and the whole AIDS epidemic, it was difficult to be out in the workplace in a lot of cases. I worked in health. My partner worked in university, fairly conservative university. You didn't go out and talk about what you did on the weekend or you modified your pronouns. Having the opportunity to actually just be who you were, to be part of a community, to find strength in that community, that was one of the things that we found. I mean, we're friends with people that we've met in the choir when we've had other choirs from Melbourne and Canberra, Auckland. You know, we've got friends now in all of those choirs that we don't just see them at choir events. They're friends, so we visit them. We go over to New Zealand. We go down to Melbourne when it's not in lockdown. You sing together, but you also find a common ground. And that sense of family, sense of a safe place is very important for a lot of people. We have a saying that, you know, once you sing with the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir, out is out. You know, you've been up there on a public stage, publicly performing, so you can't kind of crawl back into a closet if you wanted to.
I see your true colours shining through. I see your true colours, and that's why.
Since your early days of the choir, you've taken part in competitions. What have been some of those biggest challenges?
Yeah, in 1992, the choir entered the National Choral Championships, and the entry was put in April, and the competition was in August. And there was pressure from the judges and from the National Choral Association to change the name of the choir, I think because they felt uncomfortable saying those words, gay and lesbian, openly in public. They really wanted us to change the name to something like the Eastern Suburbs Choir or the Darlinghurst Choir. Our music director at the time, Stephen Schaefer, took that back to the choir and said, "What do you think? This is what we're being asked to do." And rightfully so, people stood up and said, "No, that's our name. That's who we are. That's the whole point of what we do, is trying to debunk all of those myths and to be able to say those words out loud, in public, out and proud." So choir kept its name. We actually won the community section and the open choral section. So that was a pretty amazing moment for the choir.
Where have been your favourite places to perform?
Look, I think in a lot of ways it's always your first overseas trip with the choir. So our first trip was in 1998 to the Gay Games in Amsterdam. And we went via London. And in London we sang at the Hackney Empire Theatre. We sang with the Pink Singers and the London Gay Men's Chorus. And then we went across to Paris and we sang with the Seattle Gay Men's Chorus and the Mellow Men and the Pink Singers. Our dressing room got robbed while we were there, but it was really lovely afterwards because everybody donated money so that people whose money had been stolen had money to travel on. And then we went up to Amsterdam and we were in the opening ceremony. And then there's a whole choral program associated with the games. And we did a number of small gigs. Our main performance was in the Concertgebouw, the very famous concert hall in Amsterdam.
With our William Broom and Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir President Liz Eglinton after a word from us.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Are you signed up for our new e-newsletter, Inside This Way Out?
We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming programming and deepening the conversation about your favorite international LGBTQ radio show.
All you have to do is email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And be assured that we don't share or sell your email address or anything about you to anyone else, and we never will.
Find out about our upcoming virtual Pride event, James Baldwin, a This Way Out teach-in, live streaming on Instagram and YouTube, June 25th, 2021, featuring an interview with President of the Human Rights Campaign, Alfonso David.
James Baldwin came into my life through his writings and through his conversations. I did not hear his voice until much later in life. His words are powerful on the page, but when you add his voice to those words, they go into another sphere.
I want to make it absolutely clear that I'm talking to you as Jimmy Baldwin, who was born in Harlem 39 years ago, not as an organizer and not as a Negro leader and not as a public figure, not as any of those things, but as one of the poets that you produced.
Again, to receive the occasional Inside This Way Out and let us know you're listening, email us at info@thiswayout.org.
Now let's get back to William Broom's conversation with Liz Eglinton of the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir.
Rehearse once a week in Sydney usually, but of course COVID got in the way of that. So how did you adapt?
Yeah, we got shut down because, you know, who would have believed that something as conservative in a lot of ways. Like choral singing would be considered an extreme sport. So we shut down in March last year and we started doing rehearsals via Zoom. We managed to keep that going until October last year. So we did 27 Zoom rehearsals, which was a pretty good effort. But by the end of it, I think it was getting harder and harder. People were just really finding it wasn't satisfying. A lot of people decided early on that it really wasn't their thing. A lot of them would come back to live rehearsal, so that's great. Well, it wasn't easy keeping all of that going. And also the uncertainty of not knowing when we were going to be back, because, you know, sport was back, horse racing was back, everything else was back, but choirs couldn't come back.
But you have come back. On the 26th of June, you've got your Stronger Together concert, your 30th anniversary concert at Sydney's Seymour Centre. Can you tell us more about the concert? I think you're performing alongside Jonathan Welsh and also Caroline O'Connor, who are big stars on the stage here in Australia.
We started planning for our 30th anniversary in 2019, and we were planning and planning and planning, and all of that got modified. We planned concerts, we cancelled concerts. This one is like, we're going to have this one. So we've got 26th of June locked in, Stronger Together. Stronger Together is a name taken from a piece written by Sally Whitwell that was performed at the Out and Loud Festival in Canberra in October 2019. So we thought Stronger Together really epitomises that as a group we are stronger together, that when we come together to sing, that's where our strength is. It's great to be performing with Jonathan. Jonathan was our music director for about 5 or so years. And, you know, he was a great guiding light for the choir. And we've performed with Caroline O'Connor before, and we're very happy that she has agreed to perform with us again. The concert is based around some of our old favourites. So we're kind of doing a bit of a retrospective, a bit of a future, because last year we were planning this Eurovision concert, which obviously didn't happen. We were lucky enough to have a number of pieces from Eurovision arranged by Charlie Beale, who used to be the music director of the New York City Gay Men's Chorus. So we're putting some of those songs in at the end. And in the beginning, we're doing a number of songs, one called These Candles We Burn, which was written by Stephen Schaefer, our first music director. And it was one of the songs that we used to sing at the Candlelight AIDS Memorial rallies that used to run in Sydney in the 90s. And it's really just a memorial song about all of those who died from AIDS. And more recently, we've been using that song for the Transgender Day of Remembrance. One of the other songs that we're singing in that early part of the concert is In This Very Room, which is a song we got from the Pink Singers. Hand in Hand, which is another one we've had for quite a while.
What does the future hold for the choir?
Oh, you know, it's interesting. We started, as I said before, in the age of AIDS crisis, and now we've got much more legal rights, we've got marriage equality, all of those things have come in. You know, you look at things like, well, are we just a gay and lesbian choir? Well, we've never been just a gay and lesbian choir. That just happens to be the name. One of our choir patrons, Michael Kirby, said that he thought the best way to to get negotiated peace between people was to form a choir. And in a lot of ways that does happen because we have to work together as a choir. People often say, but, you know, gay men are about gay men and lesbian women are about lesbian women. So how do you work together when you've, you know, got those differences in your life? And it's about compromise. It's about what is our common purpose and finding out what our common purpose is in the whole group. And so, you know, our future is, look, there are rural communities that struggle with having LGBTQI people. How do you include those people? How do we encourage Indigenous groups and, you know, Indigenous LGBTQI people? How do we make sure that transgender people feel welcome in the choir? One of our choir members transitioned and has probably been the only choir member who has sung in all four sections of the choir in 1 year. We still have to be out there. We still have to say that there are inequalities, there is discrimination. There are young people who feel isolated and alone because they don't understand what's going on for them in their lives. They don't fit in. So choir helps that fit in, you know, sing a few songs and get the endorphins up and you feel much better.
You're the voice that understands it. Make a noise and make it clear. Oh, 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 oh. We're not going to sit in silence. We're not going to live in fear. Oh, 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 oh.
So how can we find out more about the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir?
Well, we have a website, so it's sglc.org. Just search for Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir. It should come up and it'll give you some links. We have also Instagram and Facebook. Get in contact. Send us an email.
Liz, thank you so much for joining us. And best of luck with your concert on June the 26th. And, of course, best of luck with the future of the choir.
Thank you very much, William. It's great to talk to you.
This is William Broome in Sydney, Australia for This Way Out.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael Taylor Gray and Wenzel Jones, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from William Broome. The Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, a request from Christopher David Trentum, and donors James Kennedy and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KCMJ Colorado Springs, Colorado, 3UGE Alexandra, Victoria, WLRI Christiana, Pennsylvania, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.